Hey, I'm Allison Behringer, host of Bodies. If you're new to the show, I'd recommend going back and starting with the first episode, Sex Hurts, which is my own story, and then listening through in the order that the episodes were released. The creation of this season was a journey itself, and so I think you'll get more out of it if you follow along with me. So, this is the last episode of season one of Bodies. I hope you'll stick around to the end of the episode to hear what's next for Bodies. We've been getting a lot of requests over the course of the season to do a story about menopause. Besides hot flashes and your period ending, I didn't really know anything about menopause. In a lot of ways, it's like puberty. Your hormones are changing and setting off this whole host of bodily changes. It's something that happens to half the population. But still, it's full of mysteries. In solving any body mystery, I think we like to look for the neat lines and simple explanations, cause and effect. But once we start digging for answers, each layer we peel back reveals only more layers. And every story has made me reconsider my own life and my own body, and the bodies of people that I'm connected to. This one, even more so. We have two stories today. The first story is about a woman named Lisa. The second story, well, you'll find out. This is Bodies, a podcast about people solving the mysteries of their bodies. I'm Allison Behringer.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
. 2008 was a hard year for Lisa Renee Hartman. That summer, in the wake of the financial crisis, her husband Stephen's pay had been cut by a third. Stephen was the breadwinner. She homeschooled their four children. They were a paycheck-to-paycheck kind of family. And so to make up the gap, Lisa started picking up catering shifts, as many as she could fit into her nights and weekends. And on one particular day that summer, her husband was out of town and her mom was in town visiting. And that night, she had taken two of her kids and their friends to the fair. After the kids went to bed, she and her mom drank pomegranate cosmopolitans, commiserating about their stressed-out lives.
. 4 o'clock in the morning, I get up to pee and I feel, you know, not great. And I come back to go to bed and my mom is calling me. So I go into her room. I'm standing at the foot of her bed.
And then Lisa fainted. She went down like a tree.
The next thing I remember is waking up. My mom's on the floor and she's holding me. And she's very upset. She's yelling and calling. And the boys get up and call 911.
All the kids wake up, the ambulance comes, and they take her to the hospital. Lisa had fainted a half dozen times over the course of her life, normally at the sight of blood. But this was different. She hadn't seen blood. Lisa felt like this was completely out of the blue. And in the past, she'd always bounced back to her tough, high-energy self afterwards. But this time fainting, she didn't bounce back. Something inside of her was changing. And after the fall, her world never quite righted itself.
It was very, very, very clear very quickly that things had shifted. I'd be sitting at the dining room table having a cup of tea, and I'd suddenly be just consumed with anxiety that I didn't understand.
At first, she attributed it to stress. Then other things started happening.
I felt sort of unstable. Sometimes it felt like pretty pure anxiety. Sometimes it manifested as, you know, panic. Sometimes it was just odd dizzy spells. Sometimes it was vertigo. Sometimes it was just days where I was exhausted and I just felt like shit all day with no real explanation. That actually just makes you feel like you're dying, because I think I've said that probably 1,000 times to Stephen. I think I might be dying. How else could we explain this? It's utter madness. I'm probably dying.
It was Stephen who thought maybe she was starting to approach menopause. She was 45, so it was a possibility. Officially, menopause is when a person has gone a full year without their period, their ovaries are no longer producing estrogen. Perimenopause is that transition time that comes before that, when the hormones are starting to change. She made an appointment with her doctor and told her her symptoms. And the doctor was like, yeah, that's possible.
But then she said, so are your periods still regular? And I said, yeah, I still get a period every month. And she said, oh, no, well, then it can't be perimenopause.
But Lisa didn't totally believe her. And the symptoms kept coming.
I was having wild hot flashes. I was having cold flashes, which I never even knew was a thing. But I would wake up in the middle of the night absolutely freezing and unable to even manage that. I'd wrap myself up in a lot of blankets and it would not go away. It was like my, you know, ice water in my veins. I was having terrible insomnia. I was having vision problems. I was having all sorts of joint issues.
She was different and the world was different.
Like if we were eating dinner and somebody's scraping their silverware on their plate, sometimes that would just be like more than I could deal with. It's like suddenly these aural levels of stimulation were so apparent to me when they had not been before. The worst parts of it for me, though, were the anxiety and the panic, absolutely, unequivocally, because they made me feel like I couldn't live my life in the world the way I always have.
Pretty soon, Lisa wasn't going to the grocery store anymore. Sometimes she couldn't even make it to the mailbox. She'd be driving and suddenly be hit with surging panic and would have to pull over and wait for it to pass. Then she stopped driving, which was a big problem because her approach to homeschooling involved driving the kids to different activities and classes and internships.
If I couldn't get someone somewhere, then I couldn't get someone somewhere. I mean, it's hard not to feel like a loser when you start to experience the world that way, because you've experienced the world in a completely different way for so long and functioned well in that world. And suddenly this world that you've been so comfortable with, it's not the same.
Lisa was desperately trying to right her world and get back to herself.
I have to fix this. This has to be fixed. I sort of felt like I had to be Sherlock Holmes about this thing. Like it was this constant seeking the correct answer for each issue, because you've got this constellation of symptoms. You don't seek answers to these questions in your 30s. You seek answers to these questions at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning when the room is spinning and you think you've lost your mind. That's when you start looking for the answers.
One of the places that Lisa found answers was an online forum for women in menopause and perimenopause. It had this very pronounced blue background.
So it became a joke in my family. If anybody walked into the room and my computer was blue, it was, oh, she's on the blue screen. It's the blue screen again.
Lisa would laugh along with them, but the blue screen was no joke to her. It was saving her. She was talking with other women with the exact same constellation of symptoms that she had. She spent a lot of time on the discussion boards about anxiety. It's where her experience was validated. Eventually, she got validation from the medical establishment, too. The gynecologist examined her, and she told Lisa that she was really healthy, that there was nothing wrong, per se.
She actually took both of my hands in hers, and she leaned forward and looked at me in my eyes, and she said, you are not crazy. This is perimenopause, and everyone does it, and you're going to get through it. What I was describing was well within the normal range for perimenopausal experience.
As Lisa started to name and make sense of her experience, as she started to learn more about the wide range of peri and menopausal experiences, the conversations with her mom started changing too.
And I know when I went to my mom, when I started having all these problems and I went to my mom, because I was like, what happened? I think this is what's going on with me. What happened for you? And she was always very supportive, but she was always saying, you know, it wasn't really that hard for me. I mean, I remember a few things. But then as time went by and I started struggling and I was talking about it more and more and more would come out from her. She said something at one point about how, you know, now that you mention it, I do remember hiding in a room upstairs often and just crying like a lot, which is like, what? Wait. Really? Like, you now you remember that there was a period in your life where you just wept alone daily for a long time. It's one of the things that has become really important to me, is that why I always find myself feeling like, why didn't anybody talk to me about this? You know, I spent my whole adult life just completely dismissing the concept of menopause, but no idea. I just had no idea.
Lisa has tried to prepare her daughter, walking that fine line between not scaring her, but giving her information. She tells her that your body's going to change and how you care for it is going to matter. It's been 10 years since Lisa fainted and her life got turned upside down. Over those years, she's learned how to care for herself and how to say no, how to call upon friends for help driving her kids. Also on her list, walks, acupuncture, progesterone cream, supplements. These are the things that have helped Lisa. And in doing those things, the good days have slowly started to outweigh the bad. The other big thing, Lisa started writing, at first about homeschooling, and then about her experience with menopause. And that writing was how we found Lisa, and how I started to wrap my head around this life transition that is not openly discussed. And the more I learned and the more stories I heard, the more I found myself wondering about my mom's experience with menopause. The thing about menopause is that there's not really one standard experience. It can be loud and violent like Lisa's, or barely noticeable. But mostly it's all kinds of in-between with ups and downs that vary a lot from one person to the next. It is at once a very individual and very collective experience. And then further complicating all of this is that menopause often coincides with big life changes. Maybe kids leaving for school, maybe divorce, or caring for an elderly parent. And I think that maybe it catches us off guard because, by and large, our parents don't talk to us about it. And I guess I wonder if that's because they don't want to burden us, or because they can sense that we don't want them to talk to us about it. And so I keep wondering, like, what did my mom go through during those years? Midlife hit her hard, and so did her life get turned upside down while I was away at college, going to classes and parties, totally oblivious? Was there a chaos at home that she kept quiet, or something that I shied away from seeing?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can.
So I have something I wanted to ask you about. I've been reporting on this last episode, and it keeps leading me back to some questions that I feel like I never asked you.
Okay. And
so what I've done is booked an Amtrak to Maryland tomorrow morning.
What?
In hopes that you might have an extended recorded conversation with me.
Sure, that sounds fantastic. Yeah, this is just like, I'm like in shock. This is like so cool. What a super surprise.
Are you nervous about me asking you questions again?
No.
On the train ride down to Maryland, I start bringing myself back in time, back to where my mom was in her life in her late 40s and early 50s. And to set the stage for this conversation that my mom and I are about to have, I realize that this last-minute trip to see my mom is going to require me to tell you a few more things about myself. Growing up, my family, me, my younger brother, my mom, my dad, we were really close. Like, even though we were only semi-good Catholics, every night before we ate the meal my mom made us, the four of us would fold our hands and pray a rushed, "Bless us, O Lord." Looking back, I think the ritual was mostly about togetherness. And then, when I was 17, my dad got cancer. 6 months later, just after Christmas, he passed away. Our friends and family swooped in. The funeral happened. And then I had to go back to school. I graduated, and that summer was very quiet. That fall, I went off to college, and then it was my mom and my younger brother at home. And then he went away to college. I spent my summers during school abroad. Sophomore year, I went to India. My junior year, I taught in South Africa. I felt myself being pulled in two directions. My desire to expand my world and take advantage of every opportunity, and the need to be at home and there for my mom. I worried about her a lot. Grief seemed to have morphed into a constant anxiety for her that went way beyond typical parental worry. But I also didn't see myself moving back to Maryland anytime soon, and I pushed hard against any attempt of hers to keep me around. Home felt different. It wasn't the same. Three people felt too small to call a family. I remember one time during senior year, my brother and I were home for Christmas, and I was setting the table for a family dinner. And I, out of habit, grabbed four forks and four knives. I finally understood what people meant when they say, holidays are hard. After graduation, I moved to Thailand for a year to teach. And while I was gone, I know my mom had some kind of surgery. I think it was a hysterectomy. But even as I've learned more about women's bodies, I haven't really talked to her about it.
Oh. Okay.
Ready? Yeah.
Are you nervous?
Of course. I won't cry this time.
I might cry. Who knows? Okay. So I've been working on this story about menopause, and it made me realize, like, I don't actually know anything about your experience. Like, thinking back, I know some about what you were going through at that time, but, like, not really. Like, we didn't talk about it at the time. And so I'm curious what your experience with perimenopause and menopause was like.
Well, I think for me, it gets a little muddled because, of course, Dad passed away when I was 45. You know, the grief of losing my husband and then the grief of not losing you, but it's you leaving for college. And that is really a grief because you're not in my daily life again. And then 2 years later, leaving David. So I went from, you know, a family of four to just me in 3 years. And so that whole emptiness syndrome, I'm not sharing that with somebody and just by myself. And thank God I had amazing neighbors because I definitely cried a lot. But it was like I cried because, you know, just worrying about you when you were in Thailand and driving, you know, taking a bus in the middle of the night when it's all foggy. I don't even know all the stories. I don't want to know all the stories. Or losing your phone in South Africa and then not contacting me when you get home and just the worry would just overwhelm me. That would turn me into anxiety and tears. So many times there's so much going on in our life that we can't say, this is perimenopausal. No, this is my life right in my face right now. And that's how my menopausal times manifested itself through grief. There was a point where I was just crying all the time. And a friend of mine finally convinced me, you have to go to your doctor. You have to go and just tell them that you're crying. And I remember I don't want to go because I don't want to cry at the doctors. And so I finally made an appointment and I went and I cried and she listened and she ended up prescribing me Lexapro just to sort of...
What's that?
So Lexapro, I guess, is like a antidepressant. It was just a low dose. And it definitely helped. And I was probably on it for about a year.
I don't think I knew that story.
You probably didn't. I probably didn't tell you. Didn't want you to worry. Yeah.
Did you have other perimenopausal symptoms?
Well, my periods were just like heavy and clotty. And I thought, well, this is just normal. Like, because I'm, you know, perimenopausal moving to menopause. Like, oh, this is normal. And I finally went to a specialist and she's like, why did you wait so long? And I said, I didn't know it was abnormal. I ended up,
The doctor told her that she had a prolapsed uterus, which is when the pelvic floor weakens and isn't able to hold the uterus. And as a result, the uterus slips down into the vagina, which for my mom was the thing causing the heavy periods as well as incontinence. And she did end up having a hysterectomy to remove her uterus. That happened when I was living in Thailand, and I remember talking to her on the phone 12 hours apart right before surgery. I know she was scared, I was scared, and then I remember getting an email from her friend saying that she was out of surgery and okay.
Lynette and Mary took me to the hospital, so I had them, and they would check on me. So I had this amazing group of friends that helped me through that, since I didn't really have anybody here. But yeah, it's not easy going through surgery by yourself.
Yeah. I like opened this whole body series with this question, like, you know, like, why didn't you tell me more about my body? Like, why didn't we have this like open line of communication about our health and our mental health? And I've just been thinking about how like that question was very much like about how our lack of communication like affected me. But I've been thinking more about how like that, you know, lack of communication affected you and the ways in which I wasn't there for you and the awareness of what your body was doing and kind of all the how all the things were converging. I've just like been reflecting on that.
That's pretty cool. I think that our mother-daughter relationship has definitely improved, and and sometimes you tell me TMI.
Sometimes you tell me too much.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like over the course of making this podcast, I've been forced to reconsider a lot of things that I just never even thought about, like even like breastfeeding. When I called you the other day and I was like, what was that like? I didn't know anything about that.
But you're not supposed to.
What?
You're not supposed to. Like, that's part of your journey. You're not there in that journey yet. So like, you can't be mad at yourself that you don't know anything about breastfeeding or menopause because you're not there yet. But when you get there, you're going to have all this knowledge. You're going to have your mother right by your side, and then you're going to have your cousins and you're going to have your friends and that have been through that experience. But you shouldn't feel guilty or anything that you don't know anything about it, because like, you haven't been there yet, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess too, like, yeah, this is like dark, but I'm just grateful that we're having this conversation now, because I know how a parent can be taken away from you. And like, you know, I have friends who don't have moms anymore or don't have a good relationship with their mom. And yeah, I'm just really grateful for you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Why are these conversations between generations so hard, so rare? I think part of it is parents not wanting to scare us about the things that can happen to our bodies. And from the younger generation's end, I think we're a little afraid of these conversations. They require a major adjustment in the way that we look at our parents, not just as caregivers who are there for us, but as people, messy and mortal with their own needs and vulnerabilities. Because talking about our bodies is about reckoning with our most vulnerable selves. But something happens in that reckoning. And if making bodies and hearing from you all has taught me anything, it's that conversation is powerful, not just for the people going through the thing, but for everyone who gets to witness them and understand themselves better through their story. And in the context of menopause, conversation makes space to share the joys of this transition, of this new chapter in life. maybe freedom from child rearing or time for creative pursuits or sexual discoveries. And from what I hear, the joys of not giving a fuck. And I should tell you the next chapter of my mom's story. At 51, she fell in love again. 2 years later, she married her now husband. Sometimes, I read, menopause can mean a drop in libido. In talking to her, I've learned, not so from my mom. And so there's a lot to look forward to as our bodies age. In all of these body-related conversations with each other, across generations, between friends, with strangers on the internet, we participate in the project of collective knowledge building, knocking down old structures that isolate us and hurt us, and building a new reality, one with no dark corners and plenty of room for our full bodies, our many-layered selves. So, as I mentioned, this is the last episode of season one of Bodies. I am so grateful for you, and I hope you'll keep in touch. Keep sharing your stories and stay connected with us on the Bodies Facebook group. When we have news about what's next for Bodies, you'll be the first to know. Definitely check out Lisa's writing about menopause on Medium. It'll come right up if you Google Lisa Renee, The Long Middle. We'll also share links on the website and Facebook group. And seriously, the Facebook group, like, speaking of collective knowledge, wow, you all have been incredible. Like, someone will post a question and right away there's comments of support and resources and doctor recommendations. I can't wait to see what we'll continue to build here. You can find a link to the Bodies Facebook group in the show notes or by going to kcrw.com/bodies. You can also email me, allison@bodiespodcast.com. Tweet the show at Bodies Podcast or me at Albie Tweetin, ALBTWEETIN. You can also find me on Instagram at ALB1919. I read every one of your tweets, emails, and messages, and I will be responding to each one of them in the coming weeks. I can't tell you how much your words have sustained and encouraged me. You can find episode transcripts and resources at bodiespodcast.com. Thanks to Sarah Schoengold for your help with the website. Finally, if you like Bodies, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find the show. This episode was produced and edited by me, Allison Berenger. This podcast has only been possible because of the incredible Bodies team. Sharon Mashihi is the editorial advisor. Sharon is a narrative genius whose mentorship has shaped me as a storyteller. Camila Kerwin provides additional editorial advising. She is a brilliant writer with a knack for structuring beginnings. Camila also served as producer on this episode. Dara Hirsch is the incredibly talented composer, musician, mixer, and sound engineer. Dara creates each piece of music from scratch just for Bodies. Kristen Lepore is managing editor of Bodies and of KCRW's independent producer project. She is the glue that holds all the parts together, who keeps us organized, who keeps me sane, and who does a tremendous amount of work behind the scenes. Sarah Bachman created our cover art, painting, ripping, arranging, and rearranging all of those layers. Kathy Farthing creates our episode art. Kathy is actually my aunt, and the artwork for today's episode is a portrait of four generations of women in my family. This episode, additional advising by Karen Michelle. Look out for her forthcoming podcast called Venus Over 50, which she describes as a podcast for and about women of a certain age, looking in the front view mirror from a somewhat raunchy perspective. Reporting help from Liz Sharkey. Thank you, Katie, for your feedback on this episode. Special thanks to Caitlin Prest, Abigail Keel, who advised in the beginning of the season, and to Caitlin Pierce for your consistent support. Thank you to my roommates, who are cool with my bedroom doubling as a recording studio. Thank you, Hannah, thank you, Margot, and everyone who has supported me in this project. Finally, a huge thank you to KCRW and the Independent Producer Project, who provided the financial support for this show and tremendous support in distribution and helping me turn this idea into a real show. Thank you, Jen Farrow, Gary Scott, Caitlin Schamberg, Connie Alvarez, Adria Cloak, Jay Ferrand, Alex Cirilla, JC Swatek, Chris Ho, Rachel Gertz, and Andrea Batista. And a huge thank you to Nick White, who took a chance on this project, got the green light and got the resources, and then stepped into the wings and gave this project creative space to thrive. I'm Allison Berenger. Thank you for listening to Bodies. What was that like, putting yourself out there on a dating app at 51?
It's terrible, like, to put yourself out there and you don't feel that, you know, physically it's the best you, because I had gained a lot of weight through the time Dad was sick and I had never really lost it. So in my mind, I'm big, heavy, and fat. It was hard for me to say, but I'm nice inside. And to try to put myself out there was just way too scary until you forced me to do it.
What I've been reading about perimenopause and menopause is that sexual desire can plummet. And I'm curious about how that worked out for you.
Well, it hasn't waned because not having that human touch for so many years that, like, having a second chance, like, I'm not going to let, we're like together, we're not going to let that happen. And so we definitely make time for each other. We have a very healthy sex life, but that was an effort. We both know how to, what it feels like to lose a spouse. So we're going to basically make the best of it. So yeah, so we're doing just fine in that department.
Thanks, Mama.
You're welcome.
I love you.
I love you too.
Is that thing off yet? You trickster.